This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles, directed to New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perron.
Well, hello, friends and listeners. It's nice to have you with us once again. Coming up in this month's edition, Victor Gonatelica will join us to talk about a piece that he wrote on the massive cuts at Radio Deutsche Welle that will be taking place very soon and how it's going to affect listening in his area.
BBC Monitoring in Reading, the United Kingdom, has for many years been the center for breaking news. We'll be joined by a former employee to talk about the historical BBC service.
Now, with all the events taking place in the Middle East, there's a question that some of you are asking. What is it like working in English radio in that region? Well, Greg Fairley spent 9 years working in English radio in Beirut, and he will join us to tell his unique story.
We'll also be talking about the PCJ Summer Contest and reading some of your emails and letters. Media Network Plus, the show that causes no interference. First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines in the world of communications.
China successfully launched a new communications satellite, the Zhengxing 10, from the Xichang Satellite Launch Center in Sichuan Province. The satellite was carried by a Long March 3B rocket and blasted off at the center just after midnight this past Tuesday. The Zhengxing 10 was designed and manufactured by the China Academy of Science and Technology under the China Aerospace Science and Technology Corporation. The satellite will provide communication, broadcasting, and data transmission services for users in China and the Asia-Pacific region. It will replace the Zhengxing 5B satellite, which was launched in 1998. To mark World Refugee Day this year, Reporters Without Borders is paying tribute to those journalists who managed to continue working as journalists after being forced to flee their country. By doing so, they defy those who try to silence them. Journalists from many countries were interviewed for the report entitled Forced to Flee, But Not Silenced, Exiled Media Fight On. Whether from Burma, Sri Lanka, Rwanda, or Cuba, their accounts describe their plight of their fellow journalists and the violations of rights and freedoms in their country. Their personal stories are often secondary. These journalists feel compelled to keep reporting in order to prevent the veil of silence from being drawn over their country, in order to thaw the press freedom predators who took pleasure in forcing them to flee abroad. Reporters Without Borders has been able to support some of these initiatives of these exiled journalists, whether by providing funding or helping make others aware of what they are saying. This report also includes a summary of what the Reporters Without Borders assistant desks in Paris and Berlin have done so far this year. The Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation is reportedly refusing to repay $5 million in Iranian loans, which was used to refurbish the broadcaster studios, claiming some of the equipment supplied under the deal was defective. The loan was part of a $15 million U.S. deal reached in 2004 between the Zimbabwe government and Tehran, with around $10 million going to the Agricultural Rural Development Agency. A report by Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Media, Information and Communication Technology, presented last week, stated that the ZBC, that's the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation, only paid $300,000 back, adding that managers were refusing to sump up the balance. And finally, the content of foreign channels broadcast on pay TV in Vietnam must be edited and translated by a licensed agency. This is one of the recently approved regulations on pay TV management discussed at the seminar hosted by the Broadcasting, Television and Electronic Information Management Department under the Ministry of Information and Communications. The contents of programs must be suitable for people's health needs and not violate Vietnamese laws and regulations. The translation of content is compulsory when a foreign TV channel wants to broadcast in Vietnam. Advertising, if any, must be carried out in Vietnam and follow Vietnamese regulations on advertising. Providers of pay TV content must be responsible for advertising content on their channels. If an individual channel registers to broadcast to Vietnam, it will be granted a license. And if many channels from a single firm are registered, they will be granted a joint license. And the stories used this month come from the Media Network blog at Radio Netherlands Worldwide. To find a link to them, just go to www.pcjmedia.com.
In May, Germany's international broadcaster Deutsche Welle announced major changes in its methods of distribution. From the start of the winter transmission period B11, daily output on shortwave will be reduced from the current 260 hours to 55 hours. The remaining shortwave broadcasts will be directed to Africa and parts of Asia. As a result of these cuts, the shortwave relay stations in Trincomalee, Sri Lanka, and Sines, Portugal, will be closed. On November 1, 2011, Deutsche Welle will be discontinuing the shortwave broadcast for German, Russian, Farsi, and Indonesian. For English, the shortwave broadcast will be limited to Africa. Broadcasting times for Chinese programming will be reduced from 120 minutes to 60 minutes. For these languages, Deutsche Welle will also be increasing the online and mobile services, as well as video on demand and audio on demand. The portfolio will also include audio productions for rebroadcast by partners when applicable. Starting in November, Deutsche Welle will only be broadcasting radio programming via shortwave in the following languages: Amharic, Chinese, Dari, English and French for Africa, Hausa, Kiswahili, Pashto, Portuguese for Africa, and Urdu. Longtime media monitor and shortwave listener Victor Gunatelica has written a commentary for the DX Asia website in which he contrasts the increasing use of shortwave by China Radio International with a decline in the use of shortwave by Western broadcasters such as Deutsche Welle, which recently announced plans to close its Sri Lanka relay station at Trincomalee. He now joins us via Skype from Sri Lanka.
Victor, thanks a lot for joining us. We've all heard about cuts that have taken place in international broadcasting in the last few months. One of the latest broadcasters to cut back dramatically on their shortwave output is Radio Deutsche Welle. Now you wrote an article about this. Can you give us a gist of what you wrote in the article?
Well, why did I write that piece about Deutsche Welle? Because Deutsche Welle has been a station that I've been listening for the last 30, 40 years. And that's what has brought Germany into my mind, to my family, for my friends. And also Deutsche Welle is what has educated me what Germany really is, other than what we had heard before, like the World War and things like that. So Germany really put the picture into the correct perspective as to what Germany is. And when a station that I had been listening for 35, 40 years, and also I still do, and then when I heard that their relay station in Sri Lanka, in Trincomalee, absolutely fantastic takeoff to the entire world, I would say, other than the North American continent, I heard that they're going to close down, and also that the Germans are going to take more or less their shortwave service off the air, it really hit me. I mean, this is something crazy in my thinking. So that's why I wrote that piece and tried to justify not to do that.
Now, in your area where you live in Sri Lanka, how will these cuts affect, say, you and other people in neighboring countries to be able to listen to Deutsche Welle programming?
Well, I'll be very honest. The stations that go off shortwave they go off the face of the earth, more or less. Why do I say that? When stations like Deutsche Welle, say Radio Netherlands, you'll say, okay, we add BBC, Voice of America. Now, these stations are easy to pick up on your shortwave radio, and the listener hasn't got to pay anything. Of course, the broadcaster has to dump a lot of money in that. I know that. But what I say is, if you take Deutsche Welle, their signal is probably amongst 50 signals on any shortwave radio as one of the major broadcasters. The moment you go off shortwave and go onto the web, you're lost amongst millions of websites. And I'll tell you something, anybody who listens to the radio or very rarely would go onto the net looking for a broadcasting station. There are hundreds of things that a school kid, young guy, or even myself, me, would go to the internet to hunt for, and least of all, for some audio from Deutsche Welle or any other broadcaster. That is not the internet, is not for international radio, in my opinion, and the opinion of many people. Of course, if I'm an expatriate, I'll tell you, the only time that I really bothered to get a broadcaster on my computer connection or internet connection was when I was stuck in a hotel in Vancouver last year. I wanted to see what's happening back home in Sri Lanka. And I was able to dig out on the internet, of course, the local domestic service on the internet. I listened to the news broadcast and a little bit, and that was it. But I never bothered to listen to the BBC or RCI or anybody. So for expats living far away, to listen to their own country, maybe the internet is fantastic. But for if Germany wants to get its project itself to the world, forget the internet as a broadcaster.
We have seen this many times. I mean, for example, when Swiss Radio International closed down and became Swiss Info, and recently, in the last 12 months, Radio Sweden dropping shortwave in favor of internet. Something that my sources within Radio Sweden have told me, they said that listeners writing in have dropped off dramatically.
Of course. You know, what I always say is the internet is a fantastic complement to broadcasting on shortwave. I go to the internet of the Radio Sweden website or even the BBC Radio Veritas to find their schedules and some interesting I would browse it maybe once a week or so, just scan it and see what's on, what's coming on. Or maybe on that rare occasion when I had an interview with Kim Andrew Elliott on Communications World. Now, this is going back a couple of years because I don't think Communications World is on the Voice of America anymore. Now, I missed that program because it was impossible for me to be in front of a radio. So what I did was I went to the internet, to the archives, and got the program. Now, that's the only time I have ever listened. So what I say is the internet is a fantastic backup to real broadcasting on the air. But you drop the service, and that's the end of it. So what I say is, if Deutsche Welle, if Radio Netherlands wants to take off their shortwave coverage, they might as well completely disband the station because it just goes into oblivion.
Now, let me ask you, in Sri Lanka, where and in your part of the world, where Deutsche Welle, amongst others, have large audiences, if you talk, let's say, to other people that listen to Deutsche Welle on a regular basis and they hear the millions that are being cut, do people just look and go, wait a second, what do you mean Germany cannot afford? I mean, the money that is being spent on Deutsche Welle is such a small percentage of the total GDP of Germany. And you considering how many millions they have spent, let's say, sending to Greece and Ireland and other countries in the EU that are having financial problems, I mean, the money for Deutsche Welle, it seems so small.
Exactly. Now, if you take a country like Sri Lanka, we broadcast 3 hours a day, 3 hours a day in English to India on shortwave, the All Asia service. Of course, it's the shadow of what it was 30, 40 years ago when everybody in India more or less listened to the All Asia service of the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation, those days were called Radio Ceylon, either to the vernacular version or the English service. Now, what I say is there's hardly any advertising going on, but a country like Sri Lanka, which fought a 30-year civil war and had tremendous financial difficulties, I would say, if you compare it to Germany, could still put 3 or 4 hours of international broadcasting on shortwave. And people ask, come on, what's wrong? Germany? Is it Germany bankrupt? Is the BBC bankrupt that they can't broadcast? And isn't Germany considering itself important in the eyes of the world? What is going to happen to the German image? Aren't they interested at all? Are they thinking only of Germany for Germans and that's it? And this is a country which was so involved in projecting themselves and all that. So what's happening? We just can't understand why Germany or the BBC has to cut its Hindi program. A billion or 1 billion people, the audience in India. I mean, he says, can't the BBC afford that just simple budget compared to what the third world is doing? If Nigeria, maybe their programming is nothing so exciting as the BBC's, but if Nigeria can afford to spend five hours of broadcasting during the day, or what about India? Well, let's not talk about China, because we know China is the fastest growing economy and things like that. But people say, what's happened? What's happened to England? What's happened to Britain? What's happening to Holland? We have tremendous cultural links with Holland. You know, you can't forget that Sri Lanka was a Dutch colony, the maritime provinces, maybe about 50% of the country for 150 years. And our language is full of Dutch words. The World Heritage Site of the Gaul Fort is in beautiful shape. And we have so many links with Holland. And Holland and Sri Lanka, we have so many links. And also Portugal, if you like. But Sri Lanka and Sweden, Switzerland, well, we have absolutely no close links like that. But when you say the Dutch are going off shortwave, they would rather like them not to go off there, but even to see whether they can broadcast in Sinhala and Tamil. That's what I say. Mm-hmm. There isn't enough connections.
Let's move on to the transmitter site that Deutsche Welle has in Sri Lanka. If they close this site, have you heard anything whether or not it's going to be torn down, or will it be taken over by the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation, or will it be taken over, let's say, by even China to mm-hmm. expand their shortwave broadcast? Has there been any discussion mm-hmm. about this in Sri Lanka?
Well, not open discussions, but I understand that the Deutsche Welle relay station is more or less, they have a contract with the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation, because every aspect of broadcasting is controlled by the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation as the national broadcaster. So any foreign radio station, even the Voice of America, when they set up in Sri Lanka, they had some links, or the SLBC has to approve it and all that. So now the contract that we have, as far as I know, with the Deutsche Welle is it goes up to 2020. And if the Deutsche Welle decides to close down or pull out, the station has to be handed over to the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation. So what the SL... Now, you know, A little while ago, I mentioned that the SLBC still uses its Ekala transmitting site, which is more than 60 years old. And the Deutsche Welle is doing some relays for the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation about 4 hours a day. That's from 16:30 to 18:30 UTC, the Middle East service from Trincomalee, and also to India. There's a program called Namaste India on 15:30 to 16:30. Already the SLBC is using Deutsche Welle's Trincomalee relay for some of their own broadcasts. So if the Deutsche Welle closes it down, well, it will mean that the station, a fully functional, efficient, state-of-the-art station, will come to Sri Lanka, the Broadcasting Corporation. And if they are not just going to shut it down, they're going to use it. And whoever wants to use it, you know, Family Radio has extensive use of SLBC's medium wave and short wave facilities right now. I don't know about the future of Family Radio, but what I say is Transworld Radio and most of the broadcasters, including China, would be delighted to get into Trincomalee and broadcast to India and Africa. And it'll be a lovely relay station, just a gift to China.
Victor, thank you very much for joining us. You can find a link to the article that Victor wrote for this show, when the show's finally uploaded, at the PCJ Media site. Victor, thank you very much.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and always lovely to address shortwave listeners wherever they may be. Thank you.
The BBC monitoring service since World War II has provided an invaluable service to monitor foreign media on a number of major world events. During the Cold War, they were very active to monitor programs from Radio Moscow and others. Today, they continue to provide an important resource. Keith Somerville, who was on our last program to talk about the Facebook page SOS BBC, is now going to be telling us about what it was like working in the BBC monitoring service where he started out.
Well, it was through one of the lesser-known bits of the BBC called the Monitoring Service, which is based out in this lovely old stately home just outside Reading, west of London. And it was set up during the war to monitor foreign radio broadcasts, both for news for the BBC, but it also provided then and indeed now information to, say, the Foreign Office, Ministry of Defence, Cabinet Office, on what is being said by the foreign media in relation to major political events of the day. So I started there, oh my God, in 1980, when I'd been carrying out research. My background is originally as an academic, carrying out research on relations between the Soviet Union and liberation movements in Southern Africa. And while I was carrying out that research, a job was advertised at the monitoring service, specifically looking for people who had a knowledge of what the Soviet Union was saying to the rest of the world about its system and also about world events. So I moved to monitoring, did a couple of years there monitoring a huge range of foreign broadcasts, particularly Moscow radio in English around the world and to Africa.
If back in those days I'd walked into the BBC monitoring service, which I'm familiar with, would I have seen just rows and rows of people listening with headsets and tape recorders recording stuff on air?
Yes, pretty well. We would listen to set broadcasts. We knew which broadcasts were going where, because obviously the broadcasters wanted an audience, so they would tell people when they were broadcasting. And over time, we would monitor the main broadcasts, and you would get a picture of which are the ones that tended to have breaking news in it, which are the ones from the Soviet Union that would be addressing particular issues. So you would have where I sat as you went into what was known as the listening room. On your right as you went in were the monitors who monitored in English. And in some ways we had the most interesting job because we monitored the widest range of stations. Opposite us were the Spanish team who would monitor Madrid radio, but also Moscow in Spanish. There were the Portuguese monitors who would monitor Lisbon and Moscow in Portuguese. Czech monitors who would listen to Prague and to Bratislava and to Moscow in Czech. So each team would do its own country plus Moscow's bulletins in that language. And then at the end of the room, you had the huge Russian team, which did Moscow and other domestic radio stations in Russian. So we would all listen. You'd hear something. If it was newsworthy, you hammered it out on old typewriters and rushed into the newsroom with it. If it was more of a propaganda piece, you would probably type it out in full and it would later be published.
You're going to laugh at this, but a friend of mine who used to work at Radio Moscow by the name of Vasily Strelnikov, he hosted a show for years called Vasily's Weekend. And when he started off, he used to read news, and he said back in those days, the news at Radio Moscow was a certain time, but he read faster than other announcers at Radio Moscow. So the plan was if you were short of material, you'd have to take one of the stories that you did in the last bulletin. And he said over a five-hour period, he read this one literary story every hour and on the bottom of every hour. And he said all of a sudden on the BBC World Service, they reported on it for some strange activity going on with a literary fair in Moscow.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing we would do. I was on the night before Brezhnev died. And it was most annoying because I finished my shift at about 2 a.m, at which time Moscow Radio, domestic and foreign, had cut off a lot of its lighter programs and was playing a lot of solemn music. And we thought, Brezhnev is dead. But I went home, went to bed, and it was only when I woke up at about 10 the next morning that I actually found out, yes, he was. So we would watch Moscow behavior and other stations' behavior very closely to try and think, is there a change in the behavior? Because with societies where they perhaps weren't as immediately open, you would look for little changes to see if that told you something.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much the case with places like North Korea and maybe China 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. And one of the jobs I moved on to, at first I monitored in English, and then I spent about 9 months out in Southern Africa, based in Malawi, monitoring radio stations around Southern Africa. When I came back, I moved into the publication side, editing things that had been monitored. And for 6 months, I worked on Chinese and North Korean stuff. And it was just quite amazing. You would go through, you know, 30 pages of one North Korean speech trying to pick out something that was different.
You know, recently I spoke to someone who was very familiar with radio, the Voice of Korea from the DPRK, and he said, 30 years ago, if you listen to them, they sound exactly the same way as they do now.
That's the impression I get. Most other places have changed. Russia's broadcasting is now totally different. But North Korea, I think, is exactly the same. You've hit the nail on the head.
Media Network Plus.
Okay, now it's time to talk about the PCJ Summer Contest. We've had some entries, but we've also had some strange requests. Keith, tell us about those.
Well, actually, there's one in particular that stood out. I mean, working in radio, it's quite common to get people to request songs and birthday, you know, greetings and stuff like that. But we had one guy by the name of Andy Lampang, who lives in Malaysia, who requested a radio station, but not any radio station. It's not a talk station. It's not a music station. It's a Volmet station. Now, for those who are not familiar with Volmet, Volmet is actually a meteorological information for aircraft in flight service that is provided by a number of airports around the world. There's a website called globaltuners.com, which you can actually, it's a fantastic website because you can go there and log on to different receivers and hear these broadcasts from various different airports, but there isn't anyone here in Taiwan that has a receiver set up for Global Tuners. So he requested that I, you know, play something for him. So, Andy, going out to you in our number 2 spot this week. I mean, we could do a pop program with the stuff. But anyway, this is the Volmet station at the Songshan Airport, which is the domestic airport here in Taipei, which is only about 4 or 5 kilometers from where I live. And they're broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on 127.400 megahertz.
Songshan Airport. Information Charlie. 0630 Zulu, expect IL first approach. Runway 10, taxiway Echo 1 closed. Taxiway Whiskey between Bay 11 and taxiway Charlie Tango closed. Departure aircraft at Bay 8, 9, 10, 21 and 22 shall expect pushback face west and taxi out via taxiway Charlie. Request clearance from ground 121.9.
And Andy, just to let you know, the other frequencies that the Songshan Airport uses for the ATC, that's air traffic control, they also use 127.502 megahertz and 127.450 megahertz. And I'll put some of the clips at the PCJ Media website, so you'll probably enjoy that. All right, now time to announce the winners of the PCJ Summer Contest. Now, Paulette, you heard me say winners, right?
I heard you say winners.
What are we doing? Well, of course, we have the winners in June, July, August, and September for the grand prize, but we've had so many people entering that I thought for the first draw that we do this month, we would have two winners.
I think that's a great idea.
Now, the question that people had to answer was, what does radio mean to you? And we have some very interesting entries. So, Paulette, why don't you read off the first one?
Yes, well, Samson Islam Mau in Bangladesh wrote, radio means to me it's a human best friend. You could get to collect knowledge, world up-to-date news, science, technology, different culture, entertainment, etc. from a radio. You could travel any country by a radio without money. Your friend may cheat with you, but your best friend radio never cheating you. I think you never got in depression if you have a radio. I think maybe he means, I think you never get depressed if you have a radio, and I'd certainly go along with that.
Well, unless you're listening to like some music from Leonard Cohen or something, I suppose. let's move on now to another one from Sake Obata, who lives in Japan. He's a regular listener of ours. He says, I have been listening to radio, especially shortwave radio, for over 30 years. I use radio mainly as a method of keeping in touch with different cultures, including languages and music, and an aid of my technical hobby. I enjoy studying small loop antennas, which receive shortwave with lower noise at a limited space. More importantly, radio is perhaps the only way to get current information, especially in natural disasters, like the recent tragic events that we had here in Japan. All telephone lines, electricity was shut down, and in circumstances like that, many people recognize that radio is really an important tool. We now move to another one here in Asia, Paulette, I believe from China, right?
Yes, Li Ming in Manshan City in China said, I remember that I used to listen to faraway stations on a transistor receiver using a very long wire antenna stretching from my room to the roof. It was an amazing experience to receive signals from so far away at night. While other broadcasters have abandoned shortwave in recent years, however, I still prefer to listen to the radio. Nowadays, there are certainly more efficient ways to get news or information, but nothing really replaces radio for the way it packages that information in a presentation that is artistic and entertaining. And there's nothing quite like tuning the knob between distant voices to find one as welcoming and familiar as a radio station. I would recommend the shortwave broadcasters keep the flag flying and do not allow the light to turn down, because radio has actually become an indispensable part in my daily life.
You know, Paulette, when I was going through some of the emails and letters, there was one email that stood out. It really stood out. And you know what? I don't think I'm going to mention the guy's name on the air.
Why is that?
Well, he's from the United States. And in his answer to the question, what does radio mean to you? He said, it's a good way for me to have a break from my wife.
Oh, dear. I can see why you would want to protect him.
So let me ask you, does your husband have any hobbies to get away from you?
Hey. I'm not going to answer that one.
Anyway, don't worry, ladies and gentlemen. We will post this picture on the internet. No, I'm just kidding about that. Now, if you wish to enter, let's take a listen to that jingle, and then we will announce the first two winners. PCJ Radio would like to make you a winner. PCJ Radio is giving away three Texan 920 World Band receivers to three lucky winners in June, July, and August. In September, we are having a grand giveaway of a brand new Sanjen ATS-909X worth $399 to one lucky winner. To enter, let us know how you heard this program with the date and time, and answer the following very simple question. What does radio mean to you? You can send your entries to ats909x@gmail.com. Again, that's ats909x@gmail.com. If you wish to enter by snail mail and receive a small thank you gift for entering, you can find our postal address at www.pcjmedia.com. Winners will be announced on a monthly basis on Media Network Plus. So, good luck! All right, now time to announce the first two winners, and they are...
Jewel Murphy in Wollongong, New South Wales, Australia.
Congratulations, Mike. And another winner that we have is from India. He's from Bangalore, and his name is M. Muralidhar. So the both of you will be receiving a brand new Texan DR920. And of course, if you wish to enter, if you haven't entered already, just go to our website, www.pcjmedia.com, for all the details. One question that I get asked frequently from listeners and friends is, what is it like working in English radio in a foreign country? Well, for myself, I always found it very interesting. It is an excellent way to learn a new language, culture, and lifestyle. And by the way, there are a number of expats all over the world working in English radio in far-off places like Japan, South Korea, South Africa, across Europe, and the Middle East. Yes, the Middle East. There's a number of English radio stations in the Middle East. One of the first countries to have English radio in the Middle East is Lebanon. We're now joined by Greg Fairley, who is from the United Kingdom, and he tells us his unique story.
You interrupt your regularly scheduled program.
All over Lebanon, from 98.8 to 99.1. Greg Fairley on RMF.
Well, it was a very, very interesting experience. I was there almost 10 years. And it was incredible, I have to say. I think, you know, it's so diverse in that country. And I think coming from Europe, as I did, and just before I went to Beirut, I was living in and working in Vienna, on a radio station there. And to go from, you know, the normality of somewhere like Vienna, suddenly to the chaos of Beirut, was just a real eye opener, you know. I mean, power cuts all the time and sort of, you know, bombs going off and, you know, it was just incredible. The radio aspect was frustrating at first because I was kind of, I think I went from studios that cost about, you know, I don't know, $2 million to build in central Vienna to kind of a studio in the back of an apartment, which probably cost $12 to build, but still it sounded great, and we just had to twiddle a few knobs to make it sound better. And it was radio. It was like groundbreaking radio, because when you come from somewhere like Europe, it's all been done before. There've been the radio stars of years and years gone by, or whatever. But we were really breaking new ground back in the 90s in Lebanon when I first went there, and we were kind of, you know, giving listeners things they'd never heard before, which was fantastic.
Could you give us an example of what kind of programming was carried on the stations?
Well, mostly it was just playing the hits, really. Obviously international hits and some Arabic hit songs as well. You know, they're very passionate in Lebanon about their Arabic music, but the station I was on really was just an American pop station. And so we were really just the jocks coming in and, you know, presenting music radio like it was done elsewhere in the sort of developed world.
Collective Soul, Perfect Day, playing that one this morning for Cynthia. And that is Cynthia's favourite song, and it has been for about the last month or so.
Go, Synth.
She loves it. She can't get enough of that song. So that one's for Cynthia. And we're heading towards 9 o'clock rapidly. So that's almost it for Greg Fairley in the Morning this morning. Thanks a lot for having us on your radio. Back again to bring in the weekend tomorrow at 7 o'clock sharp. Stand by the top 12 at 12 today on RML. Lunch break between 1 and 2. Then, of course, between 4 and 7 o'clock, it is RML Drive Time with this man, John Kennedy.
Ta-da!
So, what can we expect this afternoon, John?
Oh, don't ask me. I've got no idea.
Well, go on. I want a list in front of me, nicely typed. And
obviously, what we like doing is getting plenty of people to talk to us on the radio. We do an all-request drive time show, so if you can think of your favourite song, we'll play it. And we're doing a thing called the Triple Play for today, and what really that is people call up and vote for their favourite artist or band, and after 6 o'clock, we play back the artist or band that has been asked and requested for most by all of Lebanon. Like, for example, I think U2 did it Monday and Queen was another day, and yesterday we had three in a row from Oasis.
During the time that you were there, I mean, we've heard so much about media censorship in the Middle East. Was that the case also in Lebanon? I mean, did they ever come to you and say, look, don't play this song?
Yes, I mean, it's funny that with somewhere like the Middle East, swearing is okay in songs, you know, whereas in the UK or whatever, those swear words would have been bleeped out. But anything with certain connotations of, a sexual side of things would not be allowed really to be played because of, you know, the extremes of being slightly more conservative in their views in society. But politics, obviously, would not be discussed or anything like that. I mean, you couldn't mention, you kept well away from politics and religion, obviously.
The other aspect that I wanted to talk about, especially with that part of it, is, you know, because in Lebanon you have different factions. Some groups want an all-Islamic state. Would, for example, the radio stations get letters or phone calls from, say, the extremists saying, you know, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, you should only be focusing on our culture and Islamic culture?
Not at all, not at all. I mean, you know, with a station like... you know, the ones I was on, like Radio 1 and RML at the time and things like, you know, those sort of things really didn't come up. I mean, at the end of the day, young people want to hear the latest hits. They want to give a dedication to somebody they might, you know, they love or whatever, and they want to send a message to their loved one. It's all very neutral, very innocent. Politics, you know, extremism, doesn't play a part at all. It's something that's kept well away from something like a pop radio station. It's something I never encountered. I think, you know, I felt it was totally classless and devoid of any religious sightings at all, you know. So it was a fun area to work in. I mean, I'd often do road shows, and, you know, as DJs, we'd go out and do road shows and public events and things, and it was just a case of meeting young people and having a good time. It wasn't anything more than that.
So how did you end up in Lebanon? Did you just wake up one day and say, oh, I want to go somewhere different, and I heard about a place where the bombs occasionally go off, I think I'm going to go there?
Yeah, it was a little bit like that. I had a friend who was working in Cyprus and then went over to Lebanon because it's so close to Cyprus. You can virtually see it across the water, across the Mediterranean, and used to hear the radio station, Radio 1, from Cyprus. And thought, you know, well, that sounds really interesting. I mean, that country's really close. It's a lot more interesting than Cyprus, I'd imagine. And, you know, I wanted to go and see what's going on. So he actually went over there with another colleague from the station. And they got a gig on that station. And then when I was bored to death in living the European life and wanted something more, you know, I've always wanted challenges and live in new places and discover new things. And so when I suddenly said to this friend of mine, you know, what are the chances of coming over to Lebanon? He said, why not just send over your demo tape? And at the time I was working at a station in the UK, and it took a little bit of negotiating, but eventually, because, you know, getting people to sign contracts and things in the Middle East, a lot of it is kind of a handshake, and to actually leave quite a good job in Europe on just a handshake is not something we're really used to. You know, you kind of want to get the pen out and sign something so that you can keep a copy and, you know, safe. So it was just a case of getting past that stage. There were definitely some hurdles. I mean, the way people do business, a lot of these radio stations are run by individual people or families in the Middle East. And that's something that, you know, coming from Europe, you have to get used to.
So then the stations that you were working for in Lebanon, they were not state-controlled stations. They were commercially, privately run companies.
That's right. Yeah, they were private stations, completely private. You know, that's different in as you move into the GCC area, where I am now in Dubai, because most of those stations have government affiliations.
Oasis and All Around the World on a Monday morning across Lebanon. The sun is shining and it looks as if spring is most definitely here, which is good news. 21 to 8.
And we're feeling good.
We are.
And we've got some good news here. The big wheel is up and running again, yes?
The Ferris wheel.
Beirut's famous Ferris wheel is turning again, apparently, only 19 days after it was blown over in that sandstorm, which, were you here during that sandstorm, Greg?
I was actually on holiday, but Gavin, I hear you're going to be the first to try that and go up on that Ferris wheel.
Oh, yeah,
nice
sure.
and safe.
The hits, the sports, the news, the business.
Yes, the business. Let's check out the dollar against the other currencies this morning. $1 will buy you 184.23.
Now, in Lebanon, I mean, you obviously, there is a public broadcaster, the Lebanese Broadcasting Corporation. How were they faring out compared, let's say, to the commercial broadcasters? Because we've seen this in many countries around the world where you have, say, commercial broadcasters and public broadcasters competing, and there seems to be this gradual decline of an audience for a public broadcaster.
Well, they're doing something very, very different. I mean, there's room for everyone, really. I mean, the government station in Lebanon, you know, number one, it broadcasts in Arabic. We weren't broadcasting in Arabic, so we lost a huge market who couldn't speak English. But then we gained a big market of young people that wanted to learn English, and obviously a lot of the Lebanese speak English anyway, English and French and Arabic. They're trilingual, you know, and there's some Armenian as well thrown in for good measure. And I mean, you know, it's a case of, it's totally different markets. I mean, the Lebanese Broadcasting Corporation would actually broadcast news, and they would do interviews, and they would talk about politics as a private station. You did not have a license to talk about politics. And of course, so much of Lebanon is about the politics and the different parties. So if you want to hear about what's going on in Parliament, you certainly don't listen to Radio 1 or one of the commercial stations. They're different markets and they serve different needs.
Was there any cooperation between the commercial stations and, let's say, broadcasters like the BBC World Service or the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, like program exchanges?
No, nothing like that at the time that I was there. I think now it's changed completely, obviously, because, you know, with the internet, a lot of people now listening on their handheld devices, you know, 3G's there. People are starting to explore radio stations. You can listen to any station basically on an app now from any part of the world. I mean, the days of radio from the 90s are totally different to the radio stations that we get now in 2011, you know.
From the top of the RML Tower in Asher, PA, this is Lebanon's national all-hit music station. RML Newsbeat.
Now, you left Lebanon and now you're in Dubai. What was the deciding factor to leave? Was it a better job somewhere else, or did you just have enough?
I think, you know, a mixture of things, really. I'd been in Lebanon for 9 very happy years, and I wanted to leave on a high note. So actually, when I left, I was at the top of what I could have been doing, really, in as an English broadcaster in Lebanon. I had a television program. I had a radio program. I was teaching media as well in a college. It was fantastic. It was great fun. It was very diverse. But I felt I needed to go to a larger market. And I think what I decided was that I would come to Dubai because this is where the heart of media is in the region, in the Middle East. There are, you know, dozens of stations, TV and radio stations, and it's a much more high-level professional you know, level of broadcasting. So, and it has a much broader reach. So I thought if I come here and stay with friends in Dubai, I will stay for 1 week. And if I get a job during that week, if I get a job offer, then it means that it's good for me to come here and try it out. And within 7 days, I got a job on a commercial TV station. It's not the job I'm at the moment, but it was great for getting me into Dubai. I actually think that, you know, I have such fond memories of Lebanon. I go back there very often. I think there's only a certain amount you can do. If you're career driven, like I am, you've got to keep moving forward. You've got to keep having those new challenges. And I think it was the right decision. Although I do miss so many aspects of living in a country like Lebanon, with its extreme culture and, you know, diverse people. But onwards and upwards.
That was Greg Fairley talking about his unique radio experience in Beirut, Lebanon.
And that just about wraps it up for another show here on Media Network Plus for this month. We'd like to encourage you to keep in touch with us between now and our next broadcast. And you can send us an email at our brand new email address, which is mnp@pcjmedia.com. And that again is MNP, standing, of course, for Media Network Plus, at pcjmedia.com.
And, of course, you can also write us via snail mail. But, Paulette, I don't think I'm going to give out our full address today because, well, we don't have an extra hour. But you can find out all the details by going to pcjmedia.com and clicking on About PCJ. Just click on About PCJ, and you'll find our postal address there, as well as all the contest details at our website, because next month we'll be announcing more winners of the PCJ Summer Shortwave Contest.
So, from me, Paulette McQuarrie, in Vancouver, Canada.
And from me, Keith Perron, in Taipei, Taiwan.
So long, and see you soon.
And best 73s and 88s to the ladies.
It. Your name, the milk, the sound and the silk, forever.
You back.
Where did you go?
What happened to us?
Why?